Well, I want to begin by two things, acknowledging the traditional owners past and present of this land that we're on, that it always was and always will be Aboriginal land, but I also want to acknowledge Barbara as part of this fantastic tradition of Aboriginal people who've struggled, who've never taken what was dished out by the system here. Because I think, you know, an event like Marxism is really about not just thinking about what we're going to do in the future and so on, but also celebrating the struggles that people have taken in the past and continue to take today. I just want to say a few things about some of the, you know, well, the thing that Barbara began with about the land grab aspect of the intervention. And there was a report in late March this year, like just a few weeks ago, from the Rudd government. And it said, and I reckon everything you've seen already and heard from Barbara tells you what a pack of lies this is, that communities have benefited from the intervention. And this is some of the figures that they gave for the benefits. Remote communities have got 63 extra police. Well, you've seen how useful they are. The federal government, having knocked off the CDP jobs, is now employing 1,700 people in communities, and 15,000 people, Aboriginal people, because of course it's apartheid, it's only Aboriginal people it applies to, 15,000 Aboriginal people, according to the government, are having their welfare quarantined. That's the benefits, that's the achievement. And I think the whole origins, you know, I don't want to dwell on the history because we could be here again all night talking both about the history of resistance and struggle, the history of solidarity of non-Aboriginal people when Aboriginal people have stood up. But there is the history, I think, of Australia's origins. It's worth saying a few words about. A white settler state, places like this, invaded, always require the racism of dispossession and massacre. And that's what they did to Aboriginal people, and they continue to try and do it in various ways, you know, ever since. They try and use the divide and rule of the racism about child sexual abuse, as if that this whole thing that Aboriginal people, as Barbara said, looking at that insulting bloody sign, are alcoholics and paedophiles. And you might have noticed that we don't hear so much about the child sexual abuse anymore. This is possibly because they did all this huge amount of intervention and investigation and invasion, and they didn't find the epidemic that they reckoned was there. And so we don't hear about that so much anymore, but the divide and rule, I think, is just to cover for the real agenda, which is driving Aboriginal people from their land. And that's why, you know, it's pretty obvious from everything that we've seen today, anyone who knows any of the previous history as well, that none of this is directed to closing the gap, helping Aboriginal people. It's all about disregarding Aboriginal people, not taking any notice of what they want, and making them kind of the scapegoat for a process of basically getting back the very valuable land on which Aboriginal people dare to live. But of course, most of us in this room are non-Aboriginal people. And for us, particularly for non-Aboriginal socialists, we can't stand aside and leave Aboriginal people to fight alone. We have to take sides. Because it's not just that Labor is continuing the policies of Howard, which they are, but it's the capitalist system underlying it. And I think I've got a few examples here, because every now and then you get these business organisations that I think they feel confident, like when the intervention began. They thought the tide was really going their way, that they could demonise Aboriginal people as these sort of drunkards and paedophiles and can't manage their own money and all that kind of apartheid language coming back, the old ration days all coming back. And so a few of them got a bit confident, a bit overconfident, and they said a few things about what they really meant. Because let's face it, big business interests have always been hostile to land rights. I mean, they're horrified. You think about what capitalism's about. They're horrified by the very idea that land, or anything actually, should be communally and democratically controlled by Aboriginal people rather than being exploited for profit. And you think about, this is a quote from the Western Australian Pastoralists and Graziers Association. This is, you know, people, they're in Western Australia, but they love the Northern Territory intervention because they hoped it would come to Western Australia. And they've long been campaigning to wind back land rights so that they can have open slather to exploit Aboriginal land. And this is what they said. They said of the 300 remote Aboriginal communities and outstations in Western Australia, that according to them, fewer than a third are, in their words, economically viable. And they went on to say, this is a quote from them, "We've been advocating what Howard's suggesting should happen now for the last 40 years. We've been suspicious of the way that Aboriginal affairs have been going ever since there was an equal opportunity in wage decisions made back in the 60s. Now, you couldn't get clearer than that. What they wanted was, you know, they wanted the fact that in the 60s, Aboriginal people finally got in law, if not in reality, equal wages to non-Aboriginal people they worked alongside for doing the same work. These people explicitly saying, we want to go back to before that. We liked it when they didn't have to get paid, when we could just use them as slaves. And I think that the intervention, as Barbara said, amended the Land Rights Act in the Northern Territory and it took over the land initially via these five-year leases. But, you know, you give them an inch, they take a mile. That it's not simply, I think, the land rights in the sense of any new land claims that capitalists want to eliminate. They want the communities closed down or taken over. And so all this concern about the so-called viable communities, where it's not Aboriginal people who decide whether their communities are viable, but these people, it's a cover, I think. And again, there's an announcement on the 24th of March this year, so it's only like 2 weeks ago, the government announced that they were going to spend $5.5 billion over 10 years. It sounds like a lot of money, although probably not if you're Wall Street, because that's trillions. $5.5 billion over 10 years to build more than 4,000 new houses. And then they say most of the money will be spent in 26 large communities that the government believes have the potential for economic development. Nothing about human rights, nothing about what Aboriginal people want, just the government's decided we're going to pick these ones because we think we can develop you. And, you know, basically everything that stands in the way of market forces is to be destroyed and big business interests have to be paramount. And I think anyone who follows the coverage in the National Indigenous Times, and we actually ran it on the back cover of the new... And even before the National Indigenous Times showed this stuff up, I found this thing from another employer group, again, a bit confident, a bit honest, the Northern Territory Construction Association, and this is what they said. They called on communities to quickly sign the land lease agreement that the federal and territory governments are requiring before new houses are built. That is, you've got to sign over your rights to get a house. The two governments want communities to sign over some control of their land for between 40 and 80 years as part of the Northern Territory intervention in exchange for new houses and repairs. And I think all of this, you know, the fact that you get these employer organisations, it's not some accident that all of these attacks flow from the interests of capitalism, the drive for profit at the expense of the lives of the mass of people, and in this case particularly, the expense of the lives of Aboriginal people. So I just want to wind up by saying a few things about Kevin Rudd, because I think we shouldn't be surprised that the Labor government, Kevin Rudd's support for the racist agenda is just as strong as John Howard's, that he's determined to prove that a Labor government can be trusted to run Australian capitalism in the interests of the bosses and the bosses alone. And you look at, this is just, I think, the most horrendous, the most vicious example in front of us, but it's not the only one by a long shot. You think about their promise that they were going to get rid of work choices, and yet they've introduced Fair Work Australia, which is just work choices light, another anti-union law. Their calls now, with the world economic crisis, for wage restraint, not by the bosses, by workers. Open slather for uranium mining, and guess what the uranium's under, of course? Aboriginal land. Sending more Australian troops to fight in Afghanistan, continued Muslim bashing, and continued the Liberals' destruction of the student unions. And I think, as the Northern Territory Construction Association shows, they're now going to use the economic crisis to try and back up their attacks. For example, the Construction Association bosses said that the industry needs work because of the slowing economy. And so this work that can only be got by Aboriginal people signing over their land for decades, they say that's an essential project that needs to go ahead, not only for provision of work for the industry, but, oh, by the by, also for the communities that desperately need the housing refurbishment and the new houses. If they actually recognise the need for housing refurbishment, new houses, and the millions of other things that money ought to be spent on for Aboriginal communities under their control, if they actually recognise that need, why the blackmail? Why the demand? You can't have any of this stuff until you sign up. So what should we do? Well, I think, again, Barbara's covered so much of this. I think the key thing, obviously, is solidarity with those who resist. the convergences on Canberra in the last 2 years for the opening of Parliament, the fact that, you know, I think probably as many people in this room who, like me, were at those convergences, that we've got to make sure that we organise, that we advertise, that we let people know that there's activities they can get involved in rather than just feeling sick at heart when they see what's being done. That feeling sick at heart's important because you're not human if you don't feel that when you see these things. But then you've got to get active, you've got to get organised. I think as well, you think of there's a bigger tradition of working class solidarity with Aboriginal struggles, including industrial action in the past. That even, you know, that tradition is in the past, but it's not over. It's been diminished because of the weakness of the unions, a whole series of anti-union laws, you know, collaboration by union officials, not wanting to fight the bosses and so on. But there are echoes of it. And it may seem small, but I was really happy. I was outside the court in Sydney at the time that Lex Wotton on Palm Island was having his court case, injustice there. And a guy from the Maritime Union of Australia got up and he made an announcement that there'd been something that might seem really trivial, 1 minute stoppage on the waterfront. 1 minute, what's the matter? But the 1 minute, it was done in solidarity with Lex Wotton, with the people of Palm Island, and he also raised when he spoke about the Northern Territory intervention. That the workers knew what they were doing, they stopped for a minute, it was symbolic, but it was part of that tradition of these issues are union issues and every one of us who's a union member can take these things up.
There'll be a time for questions and discussion in a second, please.
And so those symbols are only, they are just symbols, you're right. We need much more than that, you're absolutely right. And the tradition of the past is one that has to be rebuilt. I think that what we can see is that Labor's utter capitulation to the demands of big business really poses a need to build an alternative. A socialist alternative that says we're on the side of Aboriginal people, not wanting to screw them over again and again, which is what Labor in government has done over the decades. We want an organisation that will fight for the interests of workers and everyone who's oppressed. We need to build that left-wing alternative that will stand up to every injustice in the here and now, in whatever way we can, even if it's small, because you don't get somewhere by starting from, you know, say, oh, we can't do something big, so let's do nothing. We have to stand up to every injustice in the here and now. And we have to also fight for a better society, a socialist society, where decisions are made democratically for human rights and human need, and not for the profits of the rich, which is the world that we live in at the moment.